for being here this morning. If we could stand for the pledge, and we'll have Fred lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right, if we could start out with approval of the minutes from March 3rd and March 24th.
So move, Potter.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any corrections or comments? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries. Craig, your turn. He's probably saying good because I'm at the beginning. I don't have to wait through this long agenda.
Well, I stay anyway, so I'm happy to go first or last. Good morning. I am here to ask you to accept our ATI grant from DCJS for 2025-2026. The award amount was $40,305, which is pretty level with our previous year's awards. And we use those to support our community service, pretrial release, and ASAP programs.
I'll move it.
Second.
You have a motion and a second. Are there any questions?
What's ASAP programs?
That's the Alternatives to Alternative Substance Abuse Intervention Program. So it's basically an intensive program. We use those officers primarily to support our treatment courts.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is Noel or Brooks here?
Joan's here.
Joan, you're up.
Good morning. I'll try to make this relatively quick. Chris has partnered with us together with the court clerk's office and with the Office of Court Administration for what's called the Courtroom Modernization Program. Right now, we have six courtrooms in our county, none of which have the ability to do anything electronically. The Office of Court Administration has reached out to us to begin a project, which Chris, very grateful for, has partnered with us. And what the purpose of the project is to make it so when a litigant comes to court, our office, the Public Defender's Office, Department of Social Services, any civil litigant, they can come in, sit down, plug in with a USB cord and have access to monitors and access to speaker systems that actually work. And all the cable is laid down. And here's where that's important specifically for our office is we have on just about every case that we have now, we have body camera, we have drone footage, we have security footage from any mom and pop store, hotel, 7-Eleven, school, you name it. And we have footage that we have to use. Also, we have in a rape case that I recently handled, we had an audio that was caught on a Ring camera next door and they couldn't hear it. So we spent 2 hours one night when the courts closed trying to figure out which speaker would play it best. And the reason why we have to do that is several reasons, is because our courtrooms are not equipped for electronics and they don't have the ability to use speakers. And specifically in Judge McCarthy's courtroom, courtroom one, I believe it is, there's fans that blow right above the jury box and they can't hear certain things in that courtroom. And Brooks and Joe are right now trying a case and Judge Watches has been hard for some of the jurors to hear. So they're also doing a bunch of drone footage. The other thing that we have to do is we have to tape down all of the cables that go across the floor, which is a real problem for us because we spend our paralegals, once the courts close, have to go in and tape everything down so that jurors and litigants and witnesses don't trip on them. All the cables that we have to run, which are generally a monitor before the judge, a monitor on the defense side, a monitor on our table, and a monitor so that the jurors can see it. It's quite frankly, it's a little extreme. It's a little bit dangerous, to be quite frank, and it's not very effective. And in another case that I tried recently, the court reporter could not see the witness because the monitor that the witness needed to see was actually covered by a TV monitor, which is really also a problem. There's all kinds of other things that we can do with this. We can access the courtroom remotely. We can, drone footage, we can actually take a screenshot of it. They can circle it, certain areas. They can make notations on it, and it can be printed off in the courtroom, which could be used on an appeal. There's all kinds of things that when this system is implemented, it could be utilized that would benefit not just our office. The program has reached out to district attorney's office across the state to begin this process. However, it benefits every office in the county, plus any litigant that comes to the court. And it's my understanding that they maintain it. I brought Mr. Brewer here today because he can certainly explain the financial side of it probably better than I can, and maybe input some of what you've heard also, Chris.
Sure. So well said, Joan. So I sent out information on Friday. This program, what they basically state in the meetings we've had is they pay $2 for our $1. So as I stated to you guys, it's $60,000 per courtroom. They're estimating their portion to be $120,000. There's no recapture of that. There's no nothing. It's just a straight. We pay $60,000 per courtroom. They pay the remainder. Where their part comes in is labor. So they run the cable. They hook everything up. Essentially, our portion pays for the equipment that Joan speaks of. They've done this in Broome County and Erie County that they've showed us. And, you know, the capabilities are, you know, quite nice, especially in this day and age, as Joan said, you know, with body cameras and everything's electronic. You know, in hindsight, should this have been part of the courtroom build out? Certainly, but this wasn't a program then. So that's why it's a discussion item now because it's unbudgeted and, you know, just really want to gather your thought and your appetite on something like this.
I think if we have the footage, I mean, we definitely want the jurors to see all the footage that we have. I mean, and like you said, almost every house now has some sort of camera, Ring camera, you know, Arlo camera, something. And we definitely would like to make sure that, you know, both sides are getting a fair trial. So
the public defender's office and I had a trial several weeks ago, and it was in courtroom 6. And literally to see there was a ton of footage in that particular case, also besides for the fact that we had to run all the cables and make sure they were safe for people to walk it over. In that particular courtroom, the jurors had to come past the defendant, past myself, and go backwards and go through the jury box. And the cables all had to be laid to make sure that they were safe. But they also had to look over their shoulders or turn completely sideways in a chair that didn't turn that way to see the video, the only way we could set up the TV. And the judge also had to do the same because he was the courtroom. There was only one place that they could actually look. So it was really inconvenient for everybody, not just us. I mean, the defense attorney and myself had seen it, but the jurors had to turn sideways. The judge had to turn sideways. And in that particular courtroom, they were going back and forth over the cables that we had to, you know, tie down as best as we could to make sure that nobody tripped, which is also certainly an issue.
So, Chris, you're looking at this would be $60,000 per courtroom times 6.
No, we've actually discussed this. All 6 probably do not need it. We would be requesting for 4.
So if the other courtrooms, I mean, they could always, they could switch court if they had a lot of evidence needed to use a different courtroom. They could use one of the first 4.
Right. The main courtrooms that we would use would be Judge Watch's, Judge McCarthy's, Judge Tunney's, and Judge Cook's. Those are the 4 courtrooms that we use the most frequently. The circuit's courtroom, probably it's not necessary. And I think there's a 6th courtroom. I'm not aware of it, but those are the courtrooms that we use.
All right.
So. Yeah, I wasn't aware of 6. I know we
consider 4. The other 2 like hearing rooms. They are courtrooms, but correct. In the project, we call them hearing rooms.
Now, when you do a trial and you use this type of stuff, do we actually have to store that? Just like, would these meetings have to be stored once they're recorded?
The meetings, I'm sorry?
Your court cases. If this system is up, do you have to have storage to store all of it? Or okay,
no.
It won't change.
They'll come in and they tell us scientifically, and Chris and I heard this, I'm like, okay, here we go. They tell us that they come in with scientific equipment and they can shoot things like lasers, or I don't even know what it is, to tell where our acoustics are a problem and where we need better sound and things of that nature. I can tell you that there is no acoustics that are good for any case in our courtrooms right now. They weren't designed for that. Also, they weren't designed for video. So we've seen videos where in certain city courts, they've actually put video, like almost like you'd be on a plane. There's video cameras that come down or video monitors that come down and they are from the ceiling. They also deal with courtrooms that are historically relevant. So they work around those particular issues, but they make things just, they have video monitors in front of the jury box. So inside the jury box on the back of some of the chairs, we have swivel chairs in our courtroom. So I'm not sure how that will work. But they've assured us that they will certainly make it work. And it's not certainly not for the district attorney's office only. It's for any litigants that come to the courthouse. It will be civil, criminal, the public defender's office, our office, DSS, divorces, personal injury, where I'm sure there's also x-rays, all kinds of things that they would put up too in personal injury type cases. So it's not just doesn't benefit us, but the OCA has partnered with the district attorney's office across the state to make this happen. And I would certainly, there's a trial going on right now. If anybody wants to see what it looks like in action, we only have one more witness this morning, but our paralegals spend several hours before a trial preparing the courtroom for all the equipment and the things that we have to set up to run our body cams and our security systems and our audios and all the things that we have to use these days. So.
Do we have any other question?
Yeah. Is the 240 coming from?
Either contingency or unassigned fund balance. I'd probably say unassigned fund balance at this point. But we wanted your feedback before we, come up with recommendations, firm recommendations on that. And then also you saw sample MOA, we'd have to convert that to, our forms and such, but we didn't want to do too much more work without talking to you.
Yeah, I would agree. It's too bad this technology wasn't known or available when we did the courtroom renovations. Yeah. How many years ago? I mean, that's when you do that type of stuff.
Yep. Correct.
But also, if the state is offering 2-to-1 money, we should probably do it before they take that away.
Correct. That's the other thing. And our judges are very excited about this proposal too. I've actually reached out to at least one of them who's our senior judge right now and his court attorney. He was very excited to hear this was coming. I haven't spoke to the other two judges about it, but they're looking forward to making this happen if possible.
Ahead, what would Fred. Be the timing of it?
So as I stated in the email, all we have to do is give the court system a verbal Steuben's ready to move forward with X number of courtrooms. We then go on their wait list, which is about 6 months, and then they'll come in, they'll do one courtroom at a time, and they expect it to be 2 to 3 weeks per courtroom, but they'll work around us. If we have a big trial going on, they'll work night shift or second shift, whatever the case may be. They're very flexible, so that's good. Or we can flex internally and let them have it all day and night for whatever they want. So we'd be looking by close of the year to be up and running.
Fred?
That kind of answers my question. I take it this is something that needs to be done prior to the next budget year?
Not necessarily. At least from what Chris and Joan have shared with me, I don't see, any constraints on that, but certainly our recommendation would be if there's an interest to get it done now. Yeah. While we know the program's out there.
Go ahead, for the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really is an agency throughout the state with the DA's partnership. So we really would like to get on that list as soon as possible before that 6 month period grows.
So Chris, what's our total cost?
So it'd be, if we did four, it'd be $240,000.
No extras.
Correct. No extras.
Is all the hardware sourced or provided through the state? So
yes. Yeah, we don't have
what
to
about uniformity bait, everything and so on.
You don't have to for the MOA. They maintain
the equipment.
Yeah,
excuse me.
They maintain it.
The state maintains it.
No cost to us.
Correct.
Understanding.
Okay.
And it seems like for, outside people that are using it, if, say, Shimong, Livingston stuff got on this, it'd be the same equipment, more than likely, they'd be using in all that. So we'd be on the same system as everyone else.
More likely than not, yeah, I would think so. But so what happens is our office or the public defender's office or any litigant, that comes to our courtrooms could bring a computer, plug in their HDMI. I said USB. I apologize. HDMI connector to their computers, and right, they can use photos on big screen TVs for the jurors to see photos, video, audio. And like I said, in some systems, which we're pushing for, is they can circle things and print it off and use that for actual evidence in the trial while the trial's going. And they can actually access it remotely also from their offices in certain cases where it's appropriate.
I say move forward with it.
Is that a motion? Don't even. Okay. I guess, Kristen, you got the senses of us to go ahead and get on the list.
Perfect.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Morning, Tim.
Good morning. I got several items for you this morning. I'm going to start out with towing policy changes. So I want to introduce Nick Snyder to you. Nick is my deputy director on the 911 side. I don't think he's been to committee yet. So Nick's going to talk about the tow policy and the changes we've made there.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
After receiving some feedback from law enforcement, we decided it was time to revisit our towing map, which currently breaks the county down into 5 sections. With the new proposed map, we feel this will help the response time from tow vendors to the scene of an incident. What we've done is we moved the town of Avoca out of the Hornell section and added them to the Bath section. With 2 tow vendors literally right up the road in Bath, it just makes the most sense. We've made the town of Whalen and Cohocton their own section and moved the town of Danville to the Hornell section. We just figured it's a straight shot up 36 for the Hornell area tow companies to make. We split the southwest corner of the county into 2 different sections. And lastly, we created a new section, which is the Section 6 or Tow 6, which is the town of Cameron, Rathbun, and Woodhall. This area is kind of in the middle of the road between Bath, Corning, and Hornell. It'll provide vendors the opportunity to work in the areas that were covered under the different sections of our previous map. As far as the towing guidelines, we didn't change much. Risk management office receives and processes toll applications now instead of 911. It just makes the most sense that risk management office needs to verify their proof of insurance and perform the site visits. And lastly, the towing application, we've added the 2 additional new sections, which will give us 7. And we also noted that the final decision of what section or sections the tow vendor will be assigned to will be made by county administration. This limit of the tow vendors will mark all 7 sections as their choices. So if a tow company comes in and wants all 7 sections, ultimately, I mean, that'll not make the 30-minute ETA. So final decision will be made by county administration on that.
So what happens in one of those sections if you have a tow company in there, but they don't have the capabilities of covering all sorts of wrecks? Like, for instance, they only tow, I know Kristen's here from B&W, like, for instance, you know, they can tow anything. But if you had a local shop here in Bath that just has one wrecker, you know, how does that work if they're not?
So right now what we do, and this wouldn't change that. Right now there are only 2 companies that can handle everything. So we handle interstate and commercial. So a commercial vehicle on any road, we handle them separate. So only 2, and it's on a rotating basis, can do those larger tows.
Okay.
These changes primarily impact those smaller folks that they can get a vehicle.
Okay. Wanted to make sure, like in that Cameron Woodhall, you might not find someone that has a big truck wrecker. I don't want to say, you know, B&W, you can't go to Woodhall, or Fleet Pride, you can't go to Woodhall. I just wanted to clarify how that works.
It'd be one of the 2 of them for a commercial or anything on the interstate.
Okay.
Yeah. And as Nick mentioned, we met with state police on this issue. They were the ones that primarily raised it. And a lot of it was kind of the Avoca, the way that Avoca was. They were waiting on scene for a long time, right, getting the dispatch. So seems to make sense.
Yeah. And I had seen that map before, and having Avoca in that other one didn't make sense when you have both companies right there within a couple miles. So.
Yeah. So because none of this is RFP'd, as we mentioned, a lot of you were on the legislature when this process was adopted 10 years ago or so. So we don't have contracts. This is just the policy and how we implement
the policy that you adopted and we're recommending to modify at this point.
Is there any questions or comments? Go ahead, Gary.
Does this affect the driver able to ask for their own towing company?
No, it's first law enforcement or fire, whoever's incident command on the scene can request a specific tow. Passenger, so if they have AAA or something like that, is second. This only defaults when no one requests anything at the scene.
Thank you.
So that, and that's how we've been doing it, and that won't change.
Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead, Fred.
I can see instances where maybe the person involved in the accident requested a tow company to come, and they people there know that they don't have the capability to address everything. And you have to go with one of the other companies that can address all the environmental issues and so forth.
And that happens in law enforcement or fire at the scene can make that call. Okay. And tell 911, no, you can't send the smaller mom and pop. We have to have this.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and there's also been situations where a person having the accident or something requested an individual tow, and they were going to be 45 minutes to an hour. And we'll, you know, law enforcement or fire will make their adjustment to say, you know, we need to get this vehicle out of here sooner than that. So we'll then dispatch another tow vendor based upon a rotation.
Are there any other questions or comments? All right. So do we need a motion? So we're looking for a motion to change it.
I'll move to adapt it.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing it carries.
All right. As part of your package, you received a memorialization resolution on levy recertification. So basically, just a little bit of history and background on this. FEMA is going through a FEMA flood map redefined area. Once that is certified by FEMA, the levees have to be certified. So these are the levees that protect the city of Corning, Village of Castillo, Village of Boca, Village of Bath, Village of Addison, and the whole Corning area, Irwin, Gang Mills, Riverside, Corning, City of Corning, Town of Corning, South Corning. So if the levees are not recertified, and then that means that the flood protection behind the levees will be basically become part of the floodplain. So that has very major implications to residents that are behind the levee system. So this memorialization is basically looking for support from the federal government in New York State to help the municipalities with the recertification of their levee systems. We all know that the levees were built by the Army Corps of Engineers in the 1930s, typically, except for Irwin, which was built after the 72 flood. These systems have been either maintained by the Army Corps of Engineers or by New York State DEC over the years. So the question or concern is why do the local municipalities have to put in the money at, like, we've been told the estimate's about $250,000 per mile of levee into recertifying and engineering these, re-engineering these levees. So this memorialization is basically asking for the federal government and also for state to support some funding for levee recertification. We had a meeting with local municipalities few weeks ago here in the chambers with Janet Thigpen from Southern Tier Central Regional Planning and Development Board to discuss this matter. And this was one of the items that was brought forward from that meeting. And I know Jack and Kelly were both involved with that meeting. So,
yeah, this has been discussed. Kelly's been there. James is on STC also. STC has discussed this over the past couple of years. Janet keeps bringing it, you know, to our attention, but it is looking like it's more imminent that we should start working and especially ask for funding because it heavily impacts Chemung, Schuyler a little bit, but they don't have too many miles of levee. But, you know, it would be in the millions of dollars between us and Chemung to have these levees recertified, which, you know, is that your responsibility as a county? We've never really gotten involved in that. How can a town, especially some of the towns our size in Steuben County, afford 250,000 a mile? They can't. So we need a higher level of government to step in with funding.
This has been an issue since Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf.
Yep.
That's when the FEMA started backing away from certifying. Mm-hmm. Janet's been working on this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was about 10 years ago where it looked like FEMA was really pushing for this, and we had some discussions here, and then mm-hmm. they backed off and said, okay, we're not going to do that.
Yep.
And impact everyone's flood insurance and such, but there's more chatter that FEMA is going to be pushing forward with this.
Well, and we're getting closer to that MAP recertification. We've had several discovery meetings with the MAP recertification folks. They're in the process of digitizing all of those maps, you know, using LIDAR and all of the technologies that are available now. So the possibility of these maps being recertified in the near future is coming a lot closer than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and this doesn't even go to the next step, which is if they're not certified. I mean, we saw Canisteo overtopped, you know, in with Tropical Storm Debbie. So this doesn't even include any potential mitigation work to raise levees. And then you start talking about if you're raising levees, you're going to have to talk about raising roads and bridges in some areas. So, but the first step in the process is having this engineered.
I don't see any problem with us. Go ahead.
Is this, are they looking at if a levee is like 50 years for a flood,
still,
are they
still
requiring 100. That they all go to 100 year, or what are the
so
angle here?
If I remember correctly, it's a foot 3 feet above base flood, if I remember correctly from our meeting.
Yeah, and it was 1% chance, so 1 in 100 year flood.
So they're looking at 100 year flood.
That's what I saw in the documentation. Yeah,
a lot of these dikes aren't high enough.
We got 200 year floods in 3 years. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We're talking a lot of money here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't get them certified, they're going to destroy the village because nobody's going to be able to afford to pay the insurance.
Addison right now, we know that levee doesn't meet the standard in Addison right now.
Yeah.
So that levee is going to have to be raised. And again, how much is that going to cost? Again, the $250,000 per 1 mile, that's just for engineering study. That's not even to raise the levee.
Yeah, that's just the inspection, basically.
Right, exactly.
$250,000 a mile just for the inspection. Wow.
I'll move the memorialization.
All right. We have a motion for the memorialization. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries. Thanks, Tim.
Okay. Next item is a request authorization to go to bid for the Mount Washington Tower Site Shelter. So as part of the regional radio project, we put in the grant to upgrade the shelter at Mount Washington. That shelter has been there for quite a few years and is in pretty rough shape. So we need to look at transitioning over to a new shelter at that location. So this would just be an authorization to go to bid for that.
Move it.
We have a motion. Second. We have a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Okay, the next item on your agenda is cellular tower co-location. I'm going to let Ken talk a little bit about this. He's been in communications with the cell vendor.
Morning. Recently, we were contacted by Pyramid Networks. It's a company that basically does site acquisition or finds land for Verizon to put cell tower arrays on. So they reached out regarding our Quackenbush site on West Road in Corning. They're very interested in doing something there to provide better coverage for their Verizon customers. Another added benefit is also it's another cell array in the area, which then allows for use of 911 connection to customers in the area. So I reached out to a few of other counties that have done these types of agreements, Onondaga, Oswego. Onondaga has, I think it's 19 different contracts with a variety of, across the T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon. They've all just negotiated, then they've taken it to their legislature and passed it by a local law is how they've done this in the past. So looking at typical contract for this type of lease agreement, based on their existing lease agreements, you know, you see a bottom line would be a minimum $800 to $1,000 a month. So looking at around, you know, 19,000, somewhere in that range per year, probably 20,000 plus, just for salary. And typically, they said they build into their agreements that Verizon would come in, they assess the whole site, any upgrades that would be need to be done to the site are built into that agreement. So it's really a win-win. You don't have to do the work to enhance the tower if it needs it. And then at the end of the day, you benefit because you have a little bit of money coming back, plus you're providing more cell service to citizens in the area and ability for them to dial 911 if needed. So with your permission, we'd like to move forward and negotiate with Pyramid and Verizon, and then we'll work with Jack and Mr. Roselle and bring it back to the legislature for approval. That's favorable.
So that won't interfere with any of the frequencies or anything that we currently have on that?
Correct. Yep. And then any adjustments needed on the tower site will be worked into the agreement.
On them. Okay. So. Is there any questions?
I'll move it.
We have a motion.
Second.
We have a second. Seeing no questions, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries. Thank you, Ken.
I do have a couple other items here that didn't make agenda. I spoke with Jeff this morning. So about a year ago or so, we came to you with a proposal to enter into a hazard mitigation grant program with Environmental Emergency Services, which is the Flood Warning Service. This was to put gauging on Tuscarora Creek for, you know, after following Fred. We recognized, identified the issues that we had there, and we needed better gauging there to be able to give some early warning. So EES did a grant proposal for hazard mitigation grant funding, which was accepted. It's a 90-10 match. So I came back to you and asked for the county to support the 10%. Certainly with everything that's going on with FEMA right now, there's been some concerns on EES's side because, as you know, EES is supported from the local municipalities. We operate in about a $60,000 budget a year. So this project itself would take all of the funding from EES if there was no reimbursement from FEMA. And that's our biggest concern right now is with the way that they are stripping things in Washington and some of the FEMA programs. We've already identified the fact that the BRIC program, which is a sister program to HMGP, is being slashed right now. Currently, there isn't any discussion specifically for HMGP, but I anticipate that'll be coming down the pipe. So what I come back to you with today is that we, if EES were to continue on this program, order the gauge network, order the equipment, which is about $65,000 total for this project. If FEMA pulls out, would the county support EES in replacement of the cost for this gauging network that we're going to be building under this proposed FEMA mitigation grant? I just don't want to get stuck in the point of where EES pays for this and then the funding's pulled out from underneath us and we have nowhere to go.
What was the total project cost?
About $65,000. So, I mean, really return on investment. Once with this gauge network goes in place, like all of the EES gauges that we have, you know, they'll operate for quite a long time You know, some of these gauges that we have, we put in place in 1982. So, you know, these gauges have paid for themselves in flood warnings and, you know, the information that we alert the public with time and time again. So I think it's a small investment to do. And again, we would only come to the county if the funding got pulled out from underneath us.
That Tuscarora Creek, most of the time you can walk across it with your sneakers and not get them wet. But and then in about an hour, you can have a 16-foot wall of water coming down through there.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem is there's a lot of elevation, and you get a lot of rain up Fred's Way or something. It comes right down in Rathbun area, comes down the North Branch, and I'm telling you, that thing can be a wild one in a hurry. I mean, it's real flash flood.
Both sides of it draining into it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of elevation, vertical drop from Fred's area to where we are. Yeah. It can be a dangerous creek.
So do you actually need a motion from us, or is this a
just a sense, because EES is in the situation of, you know, there are enough storm clouds, especially with what's happening with FEMA, and when we saw BRIC, which is a very popular and vital program, in my opinion, for local municipalities for hazard mitigation. When that memo came out and Tim shared it with me, that basically any current project is on hold and they might pull back funding for things in construction. Obviously, they're a little nervous and it would bankrupt the organization if there wasn't a backstop.
I think for the amount of money, it'd be well worth it to back them on the just in case, because the amount of damage that can be done without that system and the forewarning of it would be horrible.
So I know we've used it numerous times in Campbell when Tim will call and say that, you know, I mean, good or bad, you know, the last time it was rising and we didn't get any, but you know what? Those people weren't there and their precious belongings weren't there if it did. So even though, you know, it didn't, we had the warning to let them know. So, I mean, it is great technology.
It's not just property loss. It's potential loss of life without the warning.
That's the key.
So I think your census is that, you know, I mean, if to move forward, and if not, we'll fund it.
Yeah, it just happened to put us in a quagmire because we're right at the point of where we're ready to order equipment, you know, and that's the biggest bulk of what we're doing here is ordering the equipment. So by having the county acknowledge the fact that you would support us in this if something happens, that gives us a little more leeway to be able to move forward, order the equipment, and keep moving forward with the project. So I appreciate that. Last item I have for you, I've been in discussions with Mr. Roselle about a intermunicipal agreement with the two cities and the village of Bath on fire investigation, with Investigator Lewis going over and his partner Jack going over to Bath PD. We would like to do an intermunicipal agreement with the two cities and the village of Bath so that their fire investigators can work alongside our fire investigators. And it spells out exactly the details of who's covering what and, you know, the workers' comp and all of those details. It's no different than any of the other intermunicipal agreements we have for any type of program like this. But we don't have one currently for fire investigation, so I want to move forward with that.
Motion.
Second. Any questions, comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Sheriff, I know you've been waiting a long time, but I got to put you on hold for one more second. Mm-hmm. I just got word that we need Joan to come back to the podium.
Okay. Nate wants to do this one thing before I get going.
Okay. What do I got him doing?
I apologize. I wasn't aware this was on. Chris brought it to my attention. So it looks like we had a training. There was a meeting expense request form back on January 31st of 2025. And our office is just looking for the expense approval.
18 staff, 2 non-staff. So it has to be approved by standing committee.
Okay.
It was a training.
Cost estimate.
What's the cost of it?
Does not say
it didn't exceed $350 from what I saw.
Not so to exceed $350,
less than $350
per person.
No, total.
No. The DEC came in and did training in our office one afternoon because there's a new DEC officer and to meet us all to do discovery training and to update a lot of our brand new ADAs and some of our paralegals on some of the econ law is what it was.
So for anyone that didn't hear that, it's not to exceed $350 for the total. And Scott made the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Right, we have a second. Okay. All in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed?
$350 is a lot easier to digest.
Than $350 That was a good dinner if it was $350
a person. Yeah, right.
Better it had been.
We would be approving that.
I didn't know it was a dinner. I thought it was just a train.
Yeah, we'll say it's good morning.
Morning.
One request here in the public defender's office. It's a request to create one assistant public defender trainee position, management grade I. And this is similar to what we did in the DA's office a while back with a trainee position, trying to get folks in that are, you know, mostly through law school and, you know, hopefully they stay afterwards. They will have a assistant public defender position open for later, assuming they transition into the full assistant public defender. Any questions?
This is covered in their salary line of the budget.
This would amend it, but it is covered by ILS funding.
Oh, okay. I'll move it.
Second.
We have a motion to say we have a question. Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just curious that salary range. This is for a trainee, and the salary range goes from $69,000 to over $100,000.
It's a pretty wide range, yeah.
Wow.
Wait.
I want to train for $100,000.
Yeah, no, it's. I think they're appointed right at the very bottom.
They're appointed at least or near the bottom, but traditionally we've done it at the bottom, and then once they obviously get into a full ADA position or APD position, sorry, they would go to the next grade and be appointed appropriately, like we would anybody else.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Casey Rogers. I'm the Deputy Chief Public Defender. We wouldn't be starting anybody who hasn't passed the bar or been admitted to the bar at $107,000.
It would be a pretty good deal. I bet we wouldn't have any trouble getting attorneys if that was the case.
Do we have any questions? Do we have a motion? Oh, we had a motion. All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Thank you all.
Now you're up, Sheriff.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Our first item is the Stop DWI plan. We've amended it so that our disbursements are about half of the original plan so that it reflects what's coming in.
I'll move it.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there questions?
Why is the reduction of what's coming in? What's that
cost? So our total budget based on last year was 177 originally. Now what we're predicting is we expect about 102,000 to come in. So we reduce the expenditures to meet that and still maintain a rollover fund.
So Kelly's question was answered. Is there any other questions? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries.
All righty. We had to do an emergency purchase to install a replacement boiler in the jail. One of the boilers that was, I think, 3 years old had a catastrophic failure. The company covered the boiler, and they covered everything except for the freight to bring it here and take the old one out. And that was in the amount of 2,000. Where am I at here? 2,050. And that was specifically for the freight to bring in the new boiler, the replacement, and take the old one out. And
I thought that was an awful cheap boiler.
Yeah. 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 The boiler itself is over $70,000.
I thought you were missing a zero.
That's a hot plug. Yeah. No. 3 years. Yeah, 3 years. They had a catastrophic failure. The company took responsibility and replaced it completely. But we still had to pay for it to get freighted in and out.
We have a motion from Scott. We have a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All righty. I have 3 yearly contract renewals for maintenance. The first is All Traffic Solutions. That's what is our traffic trailer, our radar trailer, and that's in the amount of $1,500. Do you want me to do all three at once or do them separate?
Do all three at
the Okay. time. The second is Tyler Technologies. That's soft code for the civil office. That's in the amount of $7,560.50 per year. And the third one is an existing contract with Black Creek that expired in September for that big upgrade we did. They didn't finish it by September, so we need to get that one extended until probably June. And they still have $28,000 and $28,721 worth of work to be paid for.
Is there any questions on the three contracts? If not, do we have a motion?
I'll move that.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried.
All righty. Next item is to accept we got a grant from DCGS for 2 fully outfitted Tahoes in the amount of $150,000. Like to accept that.
Motion, Potter.
Second.
You did a motion real fast on that one.
Was that costing us?
It's free. It's money.
It's money in.
Exactly. All right. We have a motion and a second. Does anyone have any question on the grant for the Tahoes? Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, Scott's on the committee. Let him go
sorry,
first.
Sorry, Scott.
I'm just reading the grant award notice. This is for $150,000, but the total amount of the award is $8,487,000.
That's
part of that big grant that we...
No, that's the state's
that's
money
the
from the
number.
Federal government.
Statewide number. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did we apply for this or they just are doling
it
out?
No, we applied for it.
And this will replace vehicles or add to?
It'll replace in next year's is what I already talked to Chris about it. We're going to apply this towards next year's because by the time it's built and we get it and it's outfitted, it'll be the end of the year.
Okay.
All right. If no other question. Oh, go ahead, Kelly.
That was my question. I went, when you get grants like this and we buy vehicles, do you just build those into our vehicle equipment?
That's the plan.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Seeing no other questions, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries.
All righty. The next one is to award the drone bid. And the company that Andy came back with and that we're recommending is Adorama in the amount of $17,403.95. And that's part of that big grant that we got.
Move it.
All right. We have a motion with Scott. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second with Potter. Any other questions?
Were there many bids?
I don't believe so. Let me get to that tab here. Got 15 different tabs here. Maybe. Tyler, Creek. There we are. So we had Adorama, B&H. They were 1,000 more. It's only 2 that I see.
So, Sheriff, just for the record, they're showing me that bid number is $16,857.85.
Yep, you are correct. I put down the wrong bid number.
Yeah, that's right. I just wanted Amanda to have the right.
Yep. Thanks. Yep. I put down the B&H one instead of the Adorama one.
Hey, it's cheaper, not more.
Fred's that's what we like.
Motion real quick.
I'll move it.
That's what we like. Yeah, $16,857.85.
think we already had a motion. Sorry. All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carry.
Thank you. Next one is authorizing a contract with the Point of the Bluff to provide enhanced police services during their concerts. Fully reimbursed with 10% administrative fee charged to them.
I'm moving.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a second. Go ahead, Kelly.
What rate do we charge them? Do we charge them the overtime rate for a person?
It'll be the overtime rate plus benefit or plus fringe plus 10%.
Okay. And then when our deputies work at a function like that, are they typically receiving overtime?
Yes.
Okay. That's yep. When we had the overtime conversation, these are one of the things that adds to that overtime hours. And correct. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. It's a straight reimbursement so that the county is whole plus 10%.
Perfect. Thank you.
Have we been doing this in previous years?
Not with them, no. Years and years and years ago we did, but we got away from it because each one would require its own contract. So we haven't done this in several years.
We have a motion. All right, we have a motion and a second already. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All righty. Next one is authorizing a mutual aid intermunicipal agreement for a countywide SWAT team with the city of Corning.
Are there any questions?
How long has your SWAT team been in operation?
Since long before I got here.
And we never had one of these before?
Nope.
Do we have a motion or do we have questions?
I'll make a motion. Am I not on this committee?
You're on every committee.
All committees.
I'll make the motion. You need to put it on the table at least to discuss it.
I'll second. I was going to motion. I'm just thinking.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. What are the any questions?
Yeah, the liability issues.
All right. I think, Tim, would you be able to answer that?
We're still perfecting that contract, but there's a draft that I think you have a copy of that we're still looking at, and we'll make sure, but it's got to go both ways. Corning's got to be happy. We got to be happy if we're having the team, then we're going to make sure and work with.
Okay.
Sheriff, how often do you utilize the SWAT team?
Typically it's around 10 to 12 times a year.
Thank you. And you guys train together?
Yes, they train monthly, twice a month, actually.
On the liability front, the way that it's drafted has us, the county, covering when a member from another law enforcement agency is on duty on SWAT. I'm assuming that's the way that the city of Corning, I shared a previous draft. I don't think they've seen this one yet.
No, they have this one.
They have this one. I'm guessing that they'll prefer that. That way they're not covering the liability of the person while they're assigned to the countywide SWAT team. And that, in my opinion, is what you folks need to be comfortable with for that. And there's two people from Corning on it?
Currently, yeah. Before, we had one from Canastillo and two from Corning. I expect with the change in administration in Bath, that may open up avenues there too.
Does this work reciprocal? Like if we're responding to help them with a SWAT, was a circumstance, then they would be covering us?
No.
No. If SWAT responded in the city of Corning, it would still be us.
Okay.
Basically, I think what the confusion might be is the SWAT team is made up with not just sheriff deputies.
Right.
There's officers from other agencies in the SWAT. I think that's where the confusion. So it's not like our SWAT team is going to Corning or Corning SWAT team's coming to Campbell
right.
to cover where the county would be. It's the contract that the SWAT team is made up from different agencies.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay. Here?
Yeah. Correct. Primarily from ours, but we, if they try out and make the tryout criteria, we'll accept them in and put them, then their agency will put them through SWAT operator course, which is 110 hours of training.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions?
Yeah, I have questions.
Yep, go ahead, Scott.
Section 5, compensation, expenses, and liability. Paragraph B, each local government shall waive any and all claims against all other local government parties to this agreement, which may arise out of a local government's activities outside of the respective jurisdictions. So is that saying that the, basically use this example, City of Corning is waiving the ability to claim anything since their employee is now on the SWAT team?
We're not paying though.
Yeah, they can't claim against us.
That's.
But they shall waive any and all claims against. Is it that's the claims just referring to wage expenses or liability claims?
I drafted that, but I'll look into it to make sure that there's a distinction between both of those money costs and liability costs.
Because in paragraph A, it talks about they'll retain pension, disability, contractual compensation while performing duties. All of these and other personnel costs with equipment and supply will be initial responsibility of the respective local government employing the officer. So is that mean the City of Corning because they're employing the officer, or is that the county because they're on the SWAT team?
Economics from the city or the village, whatever town's going to push a member to the team, and then we want to avoid the liability of that officer.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Is there any other questions? All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Carries.
All righty. The next one is authorizing a mutual aid law enforcement assistance agreement with the City of Elmira, Chemung County Sheriff, and Livingston Sheriff, so that we're covered team by team. So those agencies have a SWAT team comparable to ours. So we want to have an intermunicipal agreement so that, or mutual aid agreement, so that if they have a catastrophic issue, we can go help them. If we have a catastrophic issue, they can come help us at no cost to either.
Just a recommendation, not to go backwards, but since there was some discussion about the wording, if you're comfortable with upon county attorney review and approval, because it sounds like there might be some changes, and I'd say I don't expect personally any changes with these, but it wouldn't hurt to have the caveat upon county attorney so that if a couple words change, we don't need to bring it back to you.
So on that last one, you want to add that? So
if you're okay.
Do you care if we amend the motion?
I kind of thought every motion we did was upon the county attorney's approval.
It is, but for MOAs, IMAs, like normally when you present or you adopt what is presented, mm-hmm. if some words change,
we need a motion on the okay. So
if everyone's okay,
everyone's okay with changing mm-hmm. that,
and then just caveat this
same
with that.
Thing. So
same for this,
a motion to approve the one the sheriff is talking about now for mutual aid upon county attorney approval.
So moved.
We have a motion. Second. We have a second. Is there any questions on that? If seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Aren't there more members of the SWAT team than just the City of Corning? Was it Canastillo?
Not anymore. Right now, it's just City of Corning. The one that was on it.
Anything else that would join, we would make them.
Right. If Bath wanted to, we'd do a separate agreement with Bath, similar to this one. Mm-hmm. The one that was on from Canastillo is now with the state police, so he's not available to us.
All righty. Authorized agreement with Johnson Controls to upgrade jail building automation system. That has to do with the locks. Nope, that's so they can dial in to the heating system and perform fixes that way. And that's budgeted, and it's $12,190.21.
We have a motion by Scott. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Potter. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Okay. Next one is authorized agreement with Black Creek to upgrade the programmable logic controls touchscreen control system. And this is also budgeted for $110,175.
Move it.
We have a motion by Wendy. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Scott. Is there any questions?
So this is in the budget then.
Yep.
Okay.
So part of the big grant you received was to do Black Creek controls and the rest of the cells. Is this upgrade just for this, the existing equipment?
So this is the actual touchscreen door locks. Make that upgrades all of the door locks within the jail. That's what.
And that's currently in all the cell or all the, what do you call them, quads or whatever?
Yes, in all the housing units. Yep.
Any other questions? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All righty. Next one, authorized agreement with Myers Emergency Power Systems, which is our auxiliary emergency lighting, and it's in the amount of $5,535. And that's also budgeted.
I'm moving.
All right, we have a motion by Wendy. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All righty. Our next one is approval expenses for the Basic Academy graduation. It was $43.98, but we had more staff than visitors, so we need your approval.
Do we have a motion to approve the $43.98?
Ooh.
Why do we have to approve this?
So the admin code states that anything that is more than any meeting that is more than 50% employees requires standing committee approval. I think it's meant like it's from way back in the day so that you're not having lunch meetings every day.
Shouldn't there be a dollar?
We should change the dollar threshold so that if it's $100 or something.
Yeah,
so
they shouldn't have
next time we go through the admin code, we'll note that.
I'll move to approve it.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
You second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Carries.
Okay. Next item is request authorization to bid dental equipment for the jail use. It's part of the Prime Care contract, I believe. And it's what we have as an estimate right now is $29,985.92, but we'd want to put that out to bid.
And we are going to be bidding for used equipment, my understanding.
Anything we can get. Yes.
Because it looks like we have a track on some minor used equipment that if we bought brand new would be magnitudes more. But in working with Andy, we have to put it out to bid, but I think we're going to specify for used.
Motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Go ahead.
Yeah, Brett. Question. Is this budgeted?
No. We didn't budget for this, but I think theoretically, because right now in lieu of this you have to transport to Allegheny.
Yeah, we're taking them to Allegheny County,
so there's money in the budget theoretically because you would save that, but we don't have a line item for this equipment.
Okay.
Now, and there's a very real possibility that there could be revenue associated with it, other jails coming here.
Yeah. What about staffing to take care of dental?
It's all through Prime Care. It's no additional staffing.
Okay. I'll move it.
I think we already had a motion. Second. Yeah, we already had a motion.
Okay.
Second. There's no other questions. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All right. I have one more thing before we get into the staffing analysis, and that's Tompkins County is looking to house inmates with us. I have the authority to enter into that from you, but I just wanted to let you know we're going to also be housing in inmates from Tompkins County for $100 a day under the contract that's already been approved. I don't think I need approval.
No,
but I'll leave it up to you.
Nope. I think if we already have it in place, we're good. All right. No questions on the.
All right. I'm going to bring up Lieutenant Logsdon and Lieutenant Kennedy and Under Sheriff McNellis, if he doesn't pass out from pneumonia, and we'll get going on our staffing analysis. And guess what I didn't bring with me? My stick, yeah. So we'll do this from paper. I did have a PowerPoint, and it is still in my computer on my desk. So we talked last month about overtime and ways to achieve a lessening over overtime, and that entered into a bigger discussion, and I'll send this to you, Amanda, when I'm done. It entered into a larger discussion amongst the administrative staff of the sheriff's office of what we need to look at over a five-year plan. And we looked at the geographic area of the county. We looked at the number of complaints. We looked at the number of agencies that used to be full-time versus the number of agencies that are.
Sheriff, hold on. If the undersheriff would like to sit down, you can.
You can have us. You're awful pale.
I was going to say, pale, if you, if all right, good. I didn't want him to think he had to stand. We don't care.
We had one person faint in this.
And we looked at the number of state police that we have compared to years ago. And we also looked at response times that we experienced throughout the county. And working together, we amassed some data that we'll go over with you now. And we brought together what we believe is a five-year recommendation. Obviously, it's not going to be budget-friendly, what we're looking at, but we'll go through why we think it's important for you to consider it moving forward. And I just want to point out that none of this is an advantage to me. None of this is beneficial to me as a person, that all it does is create more headaches and worries for me. But it's important for the folks that respond to these calls and the folks that are waiting for a response that we have a realistic discussion of where our staffing is at and where it should be. So just to give you a little background on why or what my experience is in doing staffing analysis. In 1995, I was tasked with conducting analysis of the City of Corning Police Department. I created a multi-page report that created a rank and staffing structure, which included civilian dispatchers, dedicated multi-tiered supervision on every shift, a dedicated second-in-command to the chief, and a dedicated investigative unit. I focused on unity of command, span of control, and resource allocation. That plan was adopted and remains as the structure of Corning Police Department to this day. In 1998, I worked with the Division of Criminal Justice Services to conduct a proposed staffing analysis of an expansion of the Corning Police Department to include the towns of Corning and Irwin. Once that was completed, the intermunicipal agreements needed to cause that expansion were never completed. It was simply too costly for the two towns. Data, for the past 2 years, we have averaged, our office has averaged 19,230 calls for service per year. We average 53 calls per service per day for our agency with current staffing. We averaged over the last 2 years, 637 arrests per year and 825 criminal case investigations per year. Over the past 10 years, we've experienced a reduction in law enforcement resources in the county. This creates longer response times, neglected patrol time in less populated areas, and frequent occurrences of no units available to dispatch to emergencies. It is not uncommon for 911 to have to dispatch to any unit available in a given area. And this results in either a delayed response to that emergency or a stacking of calls, which means someone else's emergency gets a delayed response. So if we look at past staffing, previously, there were seven full-time police departments in Steuben County. Wayland was full-time, Canastillo was full-time, Addison was full-time, Painted Post was full-time, Bath, Corning, and Hornell were all full-time. Currently, only Bath, Corning, and Hornell are full-time agencies. All the rest have gone down to part-time. At the beginning of my career, Corning Police Department had 30 police officers. Currently, they have 20. 10 years ago, there was three full-time state police barracks and one substation. Now there's two full-time barracks with a third just opening in South Hornell. Typically, 10 years ago, there was 12 to 15 uniformed troopers on patrol during the day. Currently, it's 6 to 9 uniformed troopers on typically during a day. Previously, the state police included 2 interstate units. They're typically the first ones caught when they don't have enough folks. What I've heard anecdotally from people in the state police is that they're expecting a hiring freeze also this year due to the cost of the recent CO strike. So we don't see, there's a academy going right now. We don't expect to see much after that for the rest of the year. So I'm going to bring up Lieutenant Logsdon, and he's going to discuss current deployments with you.
Good morning, everybody. For those that don't know me, Lieutenant Logsdon, I oversee the patrol division for the sheriff's office. Currently, right now, we're running with 1 supervisor per shift and 3 deputies, 1 to cover each zone, Bath, Corning, and Hornell. And that's on a perfect day. Granted that nobody is sick, nobody has scheduled vacation, there isn't any trainings going on. So that's best case scenario. 1 deputy to cover a zone, which comprises about 10 or more townships per zone. So it's a very large area. What that does with our current staffing is if we have a call that comes out, whether it be domestic or another call that requires 2-car response, if there's not a trooper available, 911 has to pull from a different zone. So that requires a deputy from another zone to respond. So now we have 2 zones that are tied up and uncovered. So right now we're looking to increase that. Have 2 deputies per zone with a supervisor on every shift to help cover those call volumes and not be pulling from throughout the county and leaving all these other areas uncovered. How far did you want me to cover?
Keep going, you're doing great.
Mr. Logsdon.
Going off a PowerPoint here, it's some notes that we discussed, so I'm just kind of freehanding some of this. Right now, our shifts run Thursday through Sunday is 1 wheel. The other wheel is Monday through Thursday, with Thursday being our common day. That's typically when we try to fit in our trainings, because essentially that's when everybody should be working. Doesn't always quite work out that way, but that's how we're structured right now. We have a sergeant, 2 sergeants on each of the day shift wheels, and 2 sergeants currently assigned to each of the evening wheels. From the hours of 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., we have no overnight supervisor. So that 1 deputy is left working from 3 a.m. till 7 a.m. by himself or herself without a supervisor. So typically if something happens or they have questions, they're calling either the off-duty supervisor or myself at night, or 911 is contacting me for any emergencies that happen while there's no supervisor.
It's important to know that he doesn't put in for overtime for any of that. He takes those calls. He's never put in for overtime for being called at home.
Correct. So right now we have the 4 sergeants. When they're on training, when they're sick, when they're on vacation, I end up assuming their responsibilities for their shift. Just a few months ago, we had a not very common situation that happened where I had 3 supervisors on vacation, all for the same week, and then a 4th one who was out sick for a week. So out of all 4 supervisors, I was running the entire division by myself as the only supervisor for 2 weeks straight, continuing with my normal responsibilities. So that was a very burdensome time. That's not happening all the time. We try to prevent that. But these guys would never be able to take off time if we had the structure where they weren't able to take a day off without being able to backfill with a supervisor, because we just don't have the manpower to backfill right now. I went over our overnight shift. We have 3 deputies per shift. However, on that overnight shift, we currently only have 1 that is available due to short staffing and having to fill some vacancies. So right now we're running with 1 deputy on the overnight shift with no supervisor.
One per district or one for the county?
One for the entire county. So all three zones, that deputy covers the entire county. Currently, when that other position is available, we would split them east and west. So instead of 10 townships, they would be covering about 15 townships per zone. So it would be from Bath to Hornell and then all the way to Corning for the other side of the county for that deputy.
And it's important to note on the overnights, the state police double up at midnight. So their number of people gets cut back.
So they also have one car per zone as well available to back up. So in the event that a critical incident didn't come out, you have all of your available units on one incident very quickly with nobody to answer any other calls in the county. And I think we can probably, Chris, if you want to start talking, if you're okay with that, as far as critical incidents tying into that, how that works when those happen.
So Chris Kennedy, I'm the lieutenant of the criminal investigations unit. I think one thing that's important to note, the Lieutenant Logson said, is that approximately 10 years ago, it would have been common for Lieutenant Logson and I to be on the road, and there may be two of us, at best three of us for the entire county, from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. Throughout the night. So I think it does show, as shocking as these staffing concerns are now, the work that the sheriff and the legislature have done in the last 10 years has came a long way. But we're not there. I've attended multiple town board meetings. Every one of us are community members, a lot of friends, families, kids in the community. And we hear it every day, that we need more police presence. And it's not about the reactive policing. We need to become more proactive, with our policing. I feel that we're meeting the needs the best we can, with community outreach, teaching, but the need is there, and it's very evident. As far as the major case investigations, critical incidents, I think it's important to note that much of what we discussed this morning with these flooding, the one in 100-year floods that we've had two in 3 years, I could tell you that of those two floods, we had between 17 and 28 folks working from the sheriff's office, checking houses, doing rescues in many cases. So the staffing and the toll that takes on our personnel is pretty dramatic. Our staff does that without question, but it does factor into resiliency in law enforcement and any job career, right? So if Lieutenant Logs and myself are fielding phone calls, 24 hours a day, every night of the week, the concern is burnout, right? And our positions now require us to look not just today, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, how do we best put this county in a position to succeed and meet the needs of the community. So outside of the natural disaster type stuff, I would say on average, we operate, close to 12 major case incidents a year. In the last year, we've had a magnitude of major cases that have required anywhere from 18 to 25 folks on an incident. That includes the forensic investigations unit. That's what, say we have a large scale criminal case, we need to investigate that scene, secure evidence, determine what that evidence it is, and process it. The background work is equally as duress. The amount of time that it takes to investigate these cases appropriately and provide that outcome to our community takes a lot of work. And with that work, it requires people. So without a doubt, the last several years have demonstrated that the cases are occurring in this county. We're not exempt from these cases, and we just need the appropriate personnel to respond to those appropriately. Any questions for me?
I just have one comment. One thing that you guys, it's one thing that every one of you standing there doesn't give yourself enough credit for, is that when you say 12 large cases, large is a vague term. Large to you is something huge. To any one of us sitting in here, like an OD is a large case, but to you guys, that's natural. I mean, we get the list of how many, and you report to that every day. You know what I mean? So I don't want to see you sell yourself short when, because 12 doesn't sound, those are 12 major cases, but to us, we think, something you guys see every day to us would be major, so I just don't want you to sell yourself short by thinking that it's only, 12, because that 12 is.
These are, yeah, I'm referring to the major case ones that require, you know, the 20 plus employees, all hands on deck. Yeah. We're pulling people in from, you know, spending time with their families, birthday parties, things like that, much of which is a necessary part of this job. But when we're doing that consistently, you know, we talk about resiliency, burnout. Are we having the right people here? Because that's part of the concern, right? We want to have the best folks employed for the sheriff's office. Again, we all live in this county. We have a vested interest in this county. So we want to have the best folks that can have a long, efficient, and effective career providing the service that our community members deserve.
I just wanted to add one thing. I know the question has come up to me and usually does come up as far as our other partners, especially state police. They're one of our largest partners that we have here in the county. You know, how is this going to affect them, or how do they affect into our staffing analysis and our coverage? If there's one thing that I've learned, that we can only control what we can control. We can't do anything about their staffing or their numbers or what they're going to do in the future, what they're not going to do. We can control what we can do right now. And to me, law enforcement is the county's priority. It's up to us to handle that. The other PDs, they handle their areas of control. The state police are here to assist and to handle their different avenues. But we can't rely on one of their other agency to work into what we need to do, what's right here. So when we look at this staffing, this is, what do we need to do to take the responsibility to cover the county, and anything else that may play into that, we can't count on that today, tomorrow. We can only control what we can do. So,
and see, and I would back that up with, the sheriff was in here last month giving huge accreditation to, you know, different officers. And, you know, one of them was tied up on a scene with backup giving CPR for 45 minutes. You know, that's not your normal, you know, call to, you know, that's huge. But you take those two deputies off the road, saving somebody's life, you know, which is I'm going to be the first to say, I don't like this. Like the sheriff said, it's not budget friendly, but I would agree with you, is we can control what we can control as far as people on the road. You know, you never know when the state police are going to say, we're only covering state roads. You know, that leaves us with 1400 miles of road. But, you know, I just want to make that comment.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kelly.
I just wanted to ask the question with the release of inmates from the state correctional facilities. How do you feel that's going to change? Or do you think you've built that into this staffing analysis enough? Because I realize that is a new situation that we're going to face.
Right. And there's really no way to judge what that's going to do. It's a ridiculous, in my opinion, it's a ridiculously unsafe move by the governor's office to have a short-term solution to a long-term problem. And, you know, we'll have to deal with that. What I expect to see is our already overburdened parole officers become even more overburdened. And with the recent change in the law 2 years ago, it's more difficult for them to manage their parolees. So I think you're going to see more state-ready inmates in our facility. And what's going to happen is, unless they're truly rehabilitated, they're going to end up being housed by us and under our dime rather than under the state dime.
Yeah.
Maybe that was really the long-term plan.
Probably, yeah.
Go ahead,
Sheriff Pendellis.
Just two of the invariables I'd like to speak to you about is the length of call, the time they spend per call. It's changed dramatically since I started 35 years ago. I know a few years ago we did an analysis where the length of call was somewhere on average about an hour and 52 minutes. And that's because of the size of the county. Just trying to get there could take 30 minutes. And then, you know, if you're spending time with a complainant, on average, you're talking about 30 minutes. And the philosophy we like to use is what's important right now. So when you get to that call, it's not about just getting through it. And it's about spending time with people to try to resolve the problem. So you're not spending two or three more times responding to the same location. But what has changed, and I'm sure Joan Mary can attest to this, is the fact that we've seen effects like the CSI effect. So now everybody's watching TV and they're seeing this, what's going on television. That's the expectation they have. So when we're responding to calls, they're expecting to see things like touch DNA samples, which are has increased significantly. We've solved several crimes with DNA. They want to see, jurors want to see drone footage. They want to see body cam footage. And if they don't see that, if a juror doesn't see that during the prosecution, they're wondering what's wrong. Why? What are they trying to cover up? What are they not doing? So it's rolled into the profession at this point. When I was on the road, if you were efficient enough, you could do a DWI arrest in an hour. You're not going to do that now. You're talking an average of 3 hours for a DWI arrest. You're tagging body cam footage. The DA's discovery checklist is it's cumbersome. There's a lot of things that need to be covered. And I don't like to talk about other agencies. In my past life, obviously, I was with the state police. But to just kind of talk about their staffing issues, when I took the state police exam, 30,000 people took that exam. This last round, I believe just under 10,000 people took the exam. So they're facing the same issues, and I don't expect to see them in rural parts of the state to get any better. They're going to concentrate their manpower deployments along the five counties, along the Thruway, the larger metropolitan areas, to effectively cover those areas. And we just heard Friday that it's likely there's probably going to be some budgetary issues with the docs issue. They're probably going to cancel some academy classes. So we're going to have to be dealing with that. There's at one point I was on the understanding that it would take them 7 years to cover the retirements if they put an academy class through every year just to cover retirements. So, and they're behind the eight ball as it is right now. But unfortunately, and there's not a lot of good news. I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. And I would have to just reinforce the fact that it may sound strange coming from me as a former trooper, but I really believe law enforcement is a local obligation. We have an obligation to our folks to provide that service and that coverage and that protection. Law enforcement has really become a public safety mission recently, as opposed to, hey, just going out and arresting bad guys. It's expanded significantly, and rightly so. I believe sheriff's offices and local police departments, we're part of our community, and we owe that to our community to provide those services. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's get into some data. When I look at our county, Steuben County, 1,400 square miles, we can fit Yates County, Schuyler County, and Chemung County geographically within, not only within our county, but within one, each county within one of our patrol zones. So I'll say that again. Each one of our patrol zones that the deputies cover equates to a whole separate county contiguous to us. Now, they have different issues. There's more population, less population. But when you break it down, it's very similar. For example, Yates County is 376 square miles with a population of 24,472, and they average around 13,000 calls for service per year. Again, we do 29,000. They have 9 townships, 4 villages, and they have 1 village with a full-time PD, and they have a New York State Police Barracks in Dundee. So they run pretty much the same shifts that we do, the 10-hour shifts. And on their day shift, they have a sergeant and 2 deputies. On their afternoon, they have a sergeant and 2 deputies. On their overnight, they have a sergeant and 4 deputies. Because as I talked to the sheriff there, because of Route 14 and the number of fatalities they have on that. So that's in what would equate to 1 patrol zone. Schuyler County is 342 square miles with 17,507 people. They average 7,500 calls for service per year. Again, 8 townships, 4 villages, 1 village with a full-time PD, and Montour Falls is a state police substation. They do the 8-hour shifts. Each 8-hour shift has 1 sergeant and 2 deputies on at all time. Chemung County, 410 square miles. Their population's a little higher. it's $81,325. But if you take out Elmira, Elmira Heights, and Horseheads, they're at $44,000 in change. They do 22,000 calls for service per year, and they have 11 townships, 5 villages, and 1 city. And again, their city is the largest in our region. And there's a New York State Police Barracks in Horseheads, full-time police departments at Elmira PD, Elmira Heights PD, Horseheads Police Department, and West Elmira has a part-time agency. So every county of those three has at least one full-time police department and a New York State Police station or substation. Total number of townships covered in those three counties is 28. We have 32. Total number of villages is 13. We have 13. Four of theirs has full-time police coverage. Only one of ours does. Total number of cities is 1, and that's Elmira, the largest in the region. We have 2 cities, both with full-time police coverage. And outside of the Elmira municipalities, they have a total population between the three of 86,000. And outside of Corning and Hornell, we cover 73,000. So it's very, very similar in what we're looking at. If we combine those three counties, you'd have 3 sergeants and 7 deputies on days and afternoons, and 3 sergeants and 8 deputies on overnights. And again, the things that makes us so significantly different is the response time and the length of distance we have to travel between calls, and also officer safety. All of those have at least 2 people on at all times. When we have 1 in a zone, again, it's like having backup 1 county away. So when we look at visibility, and I remember Mr. Malter every time, I haven't seen anybody in Perkinsville. I haven't seen anybody come through Perkinsville. And people expect to see that at least once a year. I get from Rexville, when are we going to get some traffic enforcement out here? And I hear it from Mr. Potter. I hear it from Mr. Hanna. We hear it from all over that we want more traffic enforcement and more visibility. And to back up what Investigator Kennedy said, every town board I go to, I hear, how do we get more deputies? And how do we get deputies to be who responds? Because they help us. I hear that over and over again. So how do we get there? Well, when we look at, again, we took the 1,000-yard view. Public safety means if we have sufficient public safety, it means we have a sufficient number of trained and equipped police officers to respond to emergencies, prevent crime, and maintain order. When we do that, we have community trust. When communities feel safe and protected, it fosters not only trust in law enforcement, but also in the local government. Effective law enforcement means we have adequate staffing, which allows us to effectively investigate crimes, apprehend suspects, and address community concerns. And it also gives us accountability. When you heard Lieutenant Logsdon talk about he's the only person in charge of the entire patrol, that's ridiculous, and it lessens our accountability. So we want to be able to have proper supervision and accountability of all our officers, which, again, is crucial for maintaining public trust and making sure that we act within the law. And what's your role? Government's role? Funding and resources. Governments must allocate sufficient funding to police departments to cover staffing costs, training equipment, and other essential needs. So let's get down to the dollars and cents of it. What we're looking at is over the next 5 years, increasing to 2 deputies per zone, both days and afternoons, and 1 deputy per zone on the overnight, with a sergeant for supervision. In order to maintain proper supervision, we currently have 1 deputy that does special services and 1 deputy that's in charge of patrol, who you heard from. We would move both of them in charge of 1 wheel. So 1 lieutenant would be in charge of 3 sergeants that would be in charge of their respective shifts. So it would be 6, 6, and 3 on each wheel. Then we would bring back, we used to have a chief deputy. Prior to my coming to the sheriff's office, that position was moved to the DA's office, but the position exists. And it's in, I think it's actually even in the CBA, mentioned in the CBA for the deputies. Bring back the chief deputy position, so that that person would have accountability for those two lieutenants and also could then do all administrative investigations and make sure that the special services are taken care of. So when you look at all of that addition, it's a scary number. It's a big scary number. It's 13 deputies, two more sergeants, and one chief deputy. Again, it's a scary big number for budgeting and for us staffing. Now, there's no way we can hire 13 people right now. It would have to be done over a 4, 5, or even 6-year program in order for us to be able to find qualified candidates, in order for the budget to accept it, and in order for us to have highly trained folks that we can put out. So what our plan is would be 2 every 6 months, new deputies every 6 months over that 5 years until we hit the 13, do the chief deputy in year 2 and the 2 sergeants in year 3. That would allow you to budget. That would allow us to hire and train and then move forward. And again, this is a recommendation. So what's that look like? Well, each new deputy hired at entry step, fringe benefits, equipment, and a car is $173,000. So it's $106,000 for salary and benefits, $5,000 for initial equipment, $62,000 for the car outfitted equals $173,000 per deputy. That's now prices. That's not, we don't know what prices on vehicles are going to be in 6 months, especially with everything going on. We don't know what prices on equipment's going to be in 6 months, but that's right now prices. The salary increase from a top deputy to a sergeant is $10,743. So that'd be on top of the 173 for those 2 sergeants each. And the salary increase would be somewhere for the chief deputy, would be somewhere between the lieutenant and the undersheriff. And I'm not sure where that would fall on the grade. And we'd have to talk to Nathan on that. But I'm estimating around 7,500.
Sheriff, when you're looking at that 173 for deputy with a new vehicle.
Yeah.
Just, I know Chris gives us statements on this, but how long is that? So that vehicle is usually 3 years. Is that about what it's?
Right. That's a new vehicle with a new position. Yeah. So that's going to last.
That vehicle lasts about 3 years.
The lease is 5, but typically we're swapping them over in 3, right? That's the way I understand it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So depending on how many you put on per year, again, 2 would be 350 basically, but then you can count on at least a 10%, I would say minimum 10% increase per year for prices going up on equipment and vehicles. So, as I said, it's not a happy budget time with these, but I think it's doable. I think it's doable, especially if we push it out over 4 or 5 years.
So it's really 700 because it'd be 350 every 6 months.
Right. For a full year, it would be 700. Yeah. Yep.
Right. Yep.
Yep. And then again, adding in the chief deputy and then the 2 sergeants are going to bump that up more each year.
And I'm only speaking from myself, but you know, at my town board meeting in Campbell or Wayne or Bradford, you're 100% right. Cause I even hear that about, yeah. You know, every town has a stop sign. They're always worried about it. You know, Wayne has one by the town barns.
Yep.
Campbell has one at the bottom of the hill by the landfill, and Bradford has the 4-way stop in town. And they're always like, well, why can't, you know, when can we get a deputy or a trooper to sit there, you know, make people stop?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if you don't have coverage, you don't have coverage. But I will say I hear that all the time. But
I
every
do
town
too.
Has that one stop sign.
I do too. And people expect that. And for me, the bigger issue is the response time. Just imagine you pull in and you see somebody breaking into your house or coming out of your house. You're in your car with your kids and you're waiting a half an hour for somebody to get there. I mean, that tends to make people not move here.
What questions? Is anybody...
Questions, comments, concerns? I know it was a lot. And I'll send this to Amanda, what we just went over, so you can share it with everybody.
How many vacancies do we have now, Sheriff?
Right now we have 2. Yeah. two very recent. One went to state police, and one that you may have read about in the news just resigned.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be in addition to those two, because those two just get you back up to what you currently should have.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And I expect with the new retirement, I expect probably three more vacancies at least this year.
I like the way you put the plan together, that not trying to hire all at one time, friendly, and the fact, well, none of it's budget friendly, but budget better. But also the fact that, you know, it's one thing that every deputy, you know, that we hire, you know, your department takes pride in training them properly.
And we have,
and
the
we
most...
don't hear complaints about those officers very, very, very rarely. So right. It's like, we wouldn't want to just pick 13.
Right. And we have the most stringent background investigation of anybody in the county. Right now we're running about 50% of applicants make it through the background in order to hire. And it's worth the weeding out. I'm going to tell you that.
So what questions does anyone have for any of the representatives here? Do you have questions, Jack? Or...
Not at this point.
So what do you see as the next steps? You,
me, Jeff.
Yeah. What do you want to do next?
I don't know if we can, you know, make that happen, but I definitely personally would feel that more representation in the county is better. I know it's not budget friendly, but myself, I'm in favor of definitely adding deputies for multiple reasons, as I've stated a couple along the way, but also for safety. The amount of stuff, you know, that I look at personally, when I look at these calls numbers, I look at it as these calls. If you had more road patrol, you'd have people going slower on the road because they're afraid of getting a ticket. So you'd have less accidents, you know, I would hope. But for public safety in general, I know that sooner or later, residents are going to take it into their own hands if somebody's breaking into their house and, you know, you're waiting 30 minutes for a deputy. So I personally would like to see to move forward with at least attempting to add some deputies. I mean, that's my personal thoughts. Go ahead, Kelly.
I think that public safety is one of the services that we provide to our constituents. I mean, I'm not sure how we can afford this, and that would be up to Jack to determine what he thinks we're capable of doing and what the consumers and the constituents will tolerate. But we are very fortunate that we have a great department with deputies that are committed to all of our communities. And I know even when I drive around and I see a deputy car, I feel good about seeing them. I think one of the things that we have to remember as we're looking at this is that the deputies do more than just emergency calls. And you don't count those things in that account of your calls for service. So we ask a lot of the department. They really stepped up during COVID and did so much work for us during COVID. And do I wish we could pay them better? Yes. We have some deputies that jump onto the overtime, and I am very grateful that they do that. But I appreciate the fact that you guys came to this meeting, put together this presentation for us so that we can put together something that's thoughtful and intelligent. We did the same thing when we were considering what to do for emergency medical services. There was a need. We analyzed it. We came up with a plan, and that's what we did. So that's what this is about. We've identified the need.
I do not like the idea of a deputy going to a residence for a domestic, a gun case or something like that at 3 o'clock in the morning, knowing that their next backup is, you know, could be shared service with Chemung County. I mean, that if I was in Mr. Logs' shoes, I wouldn't want to go to that house knowingly that they had a gun and I was by myself. There could be four of them and one of me. I just, if you at least having two, you'd have some backup that would be in the area. But I'm one person, so
I have no issues with adding more deputies on. I think it's a necessity, especially in today's day and age. The question will be coming down to how many can we add
dollar wise
to make it equitable so we aren't killing the taxpayer, but we're making it safer for the taxpayer and getting enough people out there. It's going to be that line we're going to have to really look at, but I think it's a definite need.
So we've added 7 deputies since 2018. Right, we had 33 in 2018. We're at 40 now. We had 43 in 2022. So what were those 3 positions that dropped down?
And those numbers that you're looking at, there would be, if so, that's total people. Some of them might have just worked part of a year. Okay. So,
and that doesn't include SROs.
Correct.
Yeah, we've never had 43 full time.
The number I think is 41, if I recall.
So current. I guess my question is, you talked about the reduction in local law enforcement
mm-hmm.
groups.
Yep.
But over the course of since 2018 to now, what has changed other than that?
Well, let's look at when we hired or added the people on. We added 5 on to do cap arraignments, if you recall. 5 of those additional deputies was to make sure we had someone dedicated each shift to transport cap arraignments from Corning and Hornell to Bath in order to save the county $500,000 a year in attorney fees. That's why 5 of those were added.
But when they're not doing...
They're still out, yeah.
Are they still on the
yes.
road?
Yes, and they're still patrolling and answering calls, yes. The other 4 were 2 were investigators and 2 were for highway interdiction for drugs. That's what the other 4 were approved for. So they were already kind of spoken for when we put them in, and we have 1 stop DWI interdiction car now due to the vacancy, but we would go back up to 2. So we have a myriad of folks out there doing other things besides this, besides serving civil papers and doing pistol permit investigations and all of the things that the local police departments don't do. And so they're, and we're also providing services to every agency out there in evidence collection, drone. Yeah, there was just a suspicious death call in Corning where the chief called and wanted our evidence folks there to support them, which we did with the technology that we have. So we do a lot of that also support of all the other agencies within. So we're seeing fewer police officers. And again, we've increased, but for purposeful increases. And we're seeing more and more violent crime in the county, more pursuits. We're seeing more murders. We're seeing more manslaughters. I did my first, 15 years without a murder in the city of Corning. And now we have multiple murders per year. It's a different world, and it's a more transient world. We have 3 interstates and Cuca Lake coming through our county, which means those folks are moving through our county. And as we continue to the 1 stop we had last year where the SWAT team came out, and it was a woman wanted for 3 homicides in Virginia that the state police had tried to stop and were unsuccessful. We were able to stop that person with stop sticks and then using the SWAT team extricator from the vehicle when she was laying on the actual murder weapon. She had it with her. It was on the seat under her. And we were able, our SWAT team was able to get her out safely. Those are the types of things we're seeing that we didn't used to see.
Well, and I think that goes along too with Cap Court. When Cap Court first came out, everybody here knows my wife and my brother do Cap Court as local judges. They didn't have cap as much. But the amount of cap is almost every day now.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for instance, Friday, I think Patty had 6 cases. Well, that means from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m., there was 6 arrests in the county
right.
that were bad enough to hold them for cap
right.
court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think the record is like 11 or something, but that's in 1 shift. yeah. Not that that's a good record to have, but.
So that's what we're seeing.
Do you have any thoughts, Fred? Or?
No, I was just doing some preliminary figuring. If I did this correctly, we had all these positions. It looks like we'd be adding about $2 million to the budget.
Closer to 3 by yeah. the end.
I estimate around 3
yeah.
over the course of it. Mm-hmm.
I think that three, I'm not even sure you're including the 10% increase. It might be a little over three. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably
that's why
will
it
be.
Would definitely be something that has to take multi-year steps.
Yep. So I think more consideration study needs to be done. I'm not interested in spending 90 grand on an outside consultant to tell us that we need more people. We have people here telling us that.
Right. And I agree with Scott on that comment. I think you have the people in front of us that are actually doing it. And to tell you the truth, I'm glad the sheriff forgot his PowerPoint because we got more true feeling, especially right. from your officers
yep.
up here talking. It's more of a real life than just reading off that screen.
Note taken. So I'm just bringing this forward because I shared it with Kelly. She asked me to. I'm not asking for anything right now.
Right.
I'm just saying this is our recommendation.
So I think what we should do is have Chris and Jack work on this for us, with some people from the sheriff's department. I'm not knocking the sheriff's numbers here. Confirm data. Make sure, that the calls and maybe even to come up with more data and bring it back to us. I think the sounds of it is nobody's totally against, but yet would like more data and to see, but I agree with Scott. The analysis you gave us, I don't think we need to spend the 90 grand. I think we know what we need by, and I would just like to see the two departments with Jack's department and your department work at this and put together something for us. Without spending that, I'd rather spend the $90,000 to buy 1.5 vehicles than I would pay an agency to do a study that I would hope we could do internally.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I equate this a lot to what we did through the EMS work that Malter led for years. We'd like an ambulance in every town in a staff, but we can't afford that. And it's just like this. We'd like a deputy in every township, but you have to be reasonable in what you do. I mean, I hear from taxpayers too, I'd like to see more until you talk to them about the cost, because most of them don't understand the cost until they get their bill once a year in the mail.
Yeah. They think it's $75,000, not $175,000. Mm-hmm. They forget about the car and the benefits.
And fringes. And
Yeah, we can work on it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys, for coming in and giving us
thanks
that.
For listening.
The only person here is not going to thank you, Sheriff's Public Works, because they had to sit through it.
Well, you're not done yet.
We have to have an executive session.
Relative to collective bargaining.
We have a motion.
A motion. I have to go.
Second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're in executive session.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are back in open session. Motion to adjourn.
Back out.
Second. We are. Oh, everyone say aye.
Ran one of those old school.